Good evening, everybody. If I don't move those, I'll probably knock them off, so I'm going to get them out of the way. Thank you for being here tonight and for your interest in the things of God. You're wanting to worship Him. You can turn in your Old Testament to the book of Daniel, the prophecy of Daniel, chapter 3, and you'll be ready in just a moment for our text. I think everybody likes a good story, and the Bible is full of them. But of course, some stand out more than others, and I want to read one of these this evening. Many, if not most of us, maybe everyone here, knows this story. I know our young people know this story well. And it's everything a story should be. It has an intriguing plot. It has main characters in conflict, a climax, and a resolution. It's all there, and I don't think I have to point out these features, and I don't intend to do that tonight, because the story stands on its own and is great in its own right. But biblical stories are often more than simple stories. They typically do more than just have a retelling of events that occurred. So after I read the story, I want to direct our attention to some observations and lessons that I think we can learn and I hope take with us. And I'll tell you at the beginning that I started this sermon as what I thought would be primarily a sermon for young people, but as I continued, I began to see that it's for all of us, from oldest to youngest. So I hope you'll listen carefully and learn some things. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. That's 90 feet high and 9 feet wide, by the way. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent together the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the province to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps and prefects and the governors and counselors and treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, that you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king, that we will... But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did I not cast 3 men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." And he answered and said, "But I see 4 men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps and prefects, the governors and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses laid to ruin, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Great story, isn't it? Well, here are just some observations and lessons I thought it would be good for us to think about. Number one, just a reminder to those who are in charge. There is a discussion and debate as to whether the statue was a statue of a god or a statue of Nebuchadnezzar himself. And we're not going to enter that debate tonight. In either case, I would simply say, who is this king to decide who people are to worship? And especially if he is commanding that people worship himself. Do we have a man here who is blinded from reality? I mean, maybe he was a good ruler. Maybe he was a fine ruler. Maybe his nation prospered under his rule. That's nice. That's good. I hope that happened. Maybe he's an effective leader and his nation is prominent and stable and progressing. But this fella, Nebuchadnezzar, gets out of control. He gets totally out of control. Who does he think he is to make a 90-foot by 9-foot statue and command people to fall down before it? And then not only to control their worship, but threaten them if they don't. Come on. Anybody can easily see that that's not true worship. There's no loyalty there. It's commanded and coerced. And it resulted from the fact that Nebuchadnezzar obviously did not have a healthy view of himself or of his place and position in his nation. And I see some applications for us from this part of the story in several ways. Some of our number here are elected officials. In fact, I am one of these, serving on the local school board. Now, I understand that none of us is at the level of Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, not quite at that level. But it's a good reminder, I think, that though we have people to vote for us in our favor, we have to keep that in the proper balance. And at whatever level of government we occupy, we have to keep our heads on straight. We need to have a balanced view of ourselves, and we need to have a clear view of the position we hold and the responsibility we have toward it. And there are other people who occupy leadership places in various roles and responsibilities. Parents with their children, administrators in an organization, business owners, business managers, elders in the church, and more. And so I thought about some what you might call reminders in Scripture that we just need to keep before us, anybody in a leadership place. Romans chapter 12 would be one of those places. Paul is discussing spiritual gifts in this paragraph. I think many of the gifts were spiritual but not supernatural or miraculous. But he talks about the grace given to people, a measure of grace. And we might look at opportunities at leadership as we have in life as such gifts. And Paul begins by saying in Romans chapter 12, verse number 3, by the grace of God given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but think as to have sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. And that's good advice for anybody anywhere, but especially people in a leadership role, not to think too highly of yourself. And then down in the last part of that paragraph, he speaks a word to those who exercise their gifts. And one of those roles, he says, is a person who leads. And he said, if leadership is your opportunity, if it is your gift, do it with zeal. And so it's just a reminder to take the opportunities we have seriously and see them as opportunities and responsibilities to be fulfilled seriously and enthusiastically. I think often of the laws that are found in Deuteronomy chapter 17. There are laws that God had for the king who would occupy the throne in Israel. He always intended for the nation to have kings, but he wanted them to be of a certain kind. And people missed that. They wanted a king like the nations had a king, someone to lead them militarily and deliver them from whatever cause they didn't like at the moment. God wanted the king to be, among other things, a spiritual leader. So listen to Deuteronomy chapter 17. It's a prospective law for those who would serve as Israel's king. Verse 18, and when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself in a book a copy of this law approved by the Levitical priest, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law and these statutes and doing them, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brothers, that he may not turn aside from the commandment either to the right or the left, that he may continue long in his kingdom, he and his children in Israel. If every person in a leadership role, small or large, would practice what this verse calls for, to have a copy of the law and read it and learn it and fear God and keep his commandments, how different the world would be in so many ways. Everybody's not going to do that, but we as God's people can and should. And just one other little reminder from Isaiah chapter 40. The prophet gives a sobering reminder to anybody who is in a position of ruling. Isaiah 40 verse 23, he talks about God who rules the world. And he said, he brings princes to nothing and makes the rulers of the earth as emptiness. Listen to this. Scarcely are they planted. Scarcely are they sown. Scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth when he blows on them and they wither and the tempest carries them off like stubble. People get in a position and they get too big for their britches, as an old phrase goes. And they forget that God is in control. He's the king of the universe. And he just blows on them and they wither. It would have been good for Nebuchadnezzar to hear and believe these words. We can't control that. But that's no less the case for us who are in leadership roles today. So one lesson we can learn from this little story. The second one that I want us to think about is what I call the danger of going with the flow. So King Nebuchadnezzar summoned all the officials from around his kingdom, the satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, judges, justices, and magistrates from all the provinces around his land. Everybody who was anybody came to that occasion. Now you think about that. Those would have been people of intelligence, people of education, who were in leadership roles in the various levels of government throughout the empire. So the king summons them to come to this special occasion. And when they all get there, he says at the designated time when you hear this particular music, everybody falls down and worships this golden image. This golden image that is obviously made of human materials. This golden image that is obviously made by human hands. So you have to think, okay, wasn't there somebody in all this group? Somebody in this group of the nation's brightest and best who has the intelligence and the fortitude to stand up and say, you know, old Neb is just a man just like we are. And he's a man just like I am. And who is he to make this image and have everybody fall down before it in worship? Isn't there somebody among the best and the brightest who will say that? And isn't there somebody in this group who will say, you know, you think about this image. This is no God. Why are we worshiping this inanimate object that was made out of earthly materials and by the hands of men? But no one stood up to say, it isn't right. This is something that we ought not to do. Everybody just went with the flow. And it was an easy decision for most people in Babylon because they were the worshipers of more than one God anyway. Well, I'll just remind us that by observation and experience, many people, if not most people, just go with the flow. Whether they really think that way or not, whether they're in total agreement or not, maybe they don't even believe that it's the right and best way. It's easiest just to conform, just to go that way. And this typically results, if you take that way, that you'll be accepted by the most people and rejected by the fewest people. And so it's just easy to go with the flow. And that seems to be what happened. And as a matter of fact, not only did that happen, but they didn't like the three men who didn't go with the flow. It's possible that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were already suspect and despised. And others were jealous of them, maybe intimidated by them, and used this situation to kind of cause trouble for them and get them out of the way. The text doesn't say that in so many words as it does later in the situation with Daniel. But in the fact that they brought this to the king's attention maliciously, that may be the implication. So, what to make of that? I'll just say, by way of application, and I want to say it especially to our young people, but it applies to all of us, but especially to our young people. See the world for what it is. See the world for what it is. And don't love it. It has a lot of attractions. And it has some good things, some great things, some enjoyable things. But don't be fooled and don't be deceived. Listen to John, 1 John chapter 2. Do not love the world, nor the things of the world. And then he goes on to say, if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For here's what's in the world. The desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life. Not from the Father, but from the world. And the world is passing away, and also its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. You want something that's solid and that's lasting and that shapes your life in the best possible way. We are in the world, but we must not be of the world. Maybe the hardest thing we have to do. I thought about what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4. He talked about Christians who have ceased from sin. He said, you've ceased from sin so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. That's the course we've taken as Christians. But he says the time is past that suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do. And here's what he says they do. They live in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. That's what the world does. And then he says something important, I think. And with respect to this, they are surprised that you do not join with them in the same flood of debauchery. And they malign you. But he says they'll give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. So the world has its way. And there's a lot of pleasure connected with it. But it will pressure those who don't go its way to go its way. But before you decide to go that way, be aware of where it leads and what the outcome will be. Think about this. If you're in an unknown place, say you're in another country, and you're out somewhere and there's a road, but you have no idea. You just have to think, you don't have your phone or any other means. Here's a road and you don't know where it goes. You don't know where it leads. You don't know where it comes out. Are you going to take that road? Probably not. Probably not. But sometimes we take that road in worldly things. And we don't know where it's going to lead or where it's going to come out. So listen to the wise person in Proverbs 16, verse 25. There's a way that seems right to people, but its end is the way of death. There's always an end. And so Paul reminds us in Romans 12 about our calling. He said, I appeal to you to present your bodies as a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may discern what the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. And I'll just add, there were three young men on this occasion. It would always be wise to seek out others who are trying to live by these words, not to be conformed, but to be transformed. Because most of us are a lot stronger when we're with other people than we are all by ourselves. So, the dangers of going with the flow. Finally, do some thinking about convictions and decisions that transcend the circumstances. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Much of what occurs in our lives is driven by circumstances, many of which we can't control. Think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There they were, officials in a Babylonian province, and they had to come by the summons of the king to wherever the king was. And they had to be in that occasion where everybody was commanded to hear the music and bow down. There's a lot about those circumstances that they couldn't control. And all of us find ourselves at times and situations in certain settings that we didn't create and we can't control. We live in a world that we cannot escape from. We interact with people, and often our connections and interactions place us in circumstances that we can't control. But in those circumstances that we can't control, we can have convictions about God, and we can make decisions about what we're going to do that transcend the circumstances. By that I mean we make decisions that circumstances don't change. Look at these three guys. They're standing before the king, and all this pomp and circumstance goes on. You know, he brings them before him, and he gives them another chance. He said, maybe you didn't understand, maybe you didn't hear. So let me tell you again that if you, when you hear the music, you bow down before the image, this whole business is over with, and you go on your way, and I'll go on mine. So he, with much pomp and circumstance, brings them into the setting to give them an opportunity. And then he threatens them. He intimidates them. He said, okay, if you don't do this, we're not just going to throw you in the fire, but we're going to heat it 7 times hotter. And then later he ties them up. And so all that, he's giving them time, I think, to make a decision to change their mind so they'll obey the royal edict. But it's all just a waste of time because they've already decided. They have a conviction about God. They say, God can deliver us. And he will deliver us from your hand. But I tell you what, if he doesn't deliver us, it's okay. Whether he does or where he doesn't matter, we're not going to bow down to this image that you have set before us because of what we know and believe about our God. Ooh, that makes the king really mad. And so he pumps up the fire and he ties them up and all that, but they don't change. Their convictions are those that transcend the circumstances. And I just say to us, all of us, older or younger, may we have such convictions and courage to do what's right wherever we are, whomever we're with, whatever's going on. To follow Jesus and to do his will obediently and persistently in all situations. To seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness everywhere, every time, in every way. You know, we can decide that there are some words that I'm not going to say because they're vulgar or blasphemous. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter where I am. It doesn't matter what happens. There are some words that I'm not going to say. That's a conviction that transcends circumstances. We can decide there are places I won't go. There are things that I won't do. It doesn't matter who I'm with. It doesn't matter what everybody else is doing. Because what determines it is a decision that I've made about myself and my God in whom I have believed. And so I heard somebody quite a few years ago talk about who we are and where we're going. Did you hear that lesson? From Colossians chapter 3. Remember who you are and remember where you're going. And that's what we all have to do as Christians, to walk like we need to walk and to do what we need to do. Remember, we're Christians wherever we are, whoever we're with, whatever we're doing. And we want to go to heaven, and we know that Jesus will take us there if we walk with him carefully and faithfully. So make decisions and have convictions that transcend your circumstances. So those are just some lessons that I noticed from this great story that I thought would be a good reminder for us. And I thank you for listening to them this evening. If even tonight there's some decision you need to make about Jesus that we can help you with, to be baptized into him, to come back to him, to walk with him more carefully, we want to make that available. Jonathan is going to lead us in a song that we offer as an invitation. I'll be at the front to help you with any spiritual need. Let's stand and sing in his holy sight and decide to be just that as we sing.